Chapter 40, Concerning Tolus, a Criminal, Who Dwelt in the Middle of the Gobi Desert. "Quick, get up!" shouted Good Fortune. "The moon is rising!" But the moon didn't come out, and the camels stood saddled. "The moon is late," said Good Fortune, taking his camel by the reins and leading the way up the stony slope. The others followed. They all walked, for it was very cold. The stones slipped under the camel's feet and rolled down into the valley. The black walls of cliff echoed back each question, and an icy breeze blew down the gorges. Affliction buttoned up his coat. Further on, the ground was firmer, and when the moon rose and the gorges of the stony mountains changed to gentle valleys, they all mounted their camels. The going was slow and continuously uphill. The stars came nearer and nearer, and then, one after the other, disappeared, and the mighty sun rose over the parched earth. Towards 10 o'clock, they put up the tent and let the camels loose to find what food they could, but there was nothing but tamarisks. Christian and Big Tiger went to sleep. Good Fortune slept, too, and Affliction just dozed until it was time to prepare the food. Then Christian and Big Tiger collected the camels, and the poodle helped them. Once again, the camels were allowed to try their luck and nibble the tamarisks down to the wood. They were only rounded up when they strayed too far from the camp, but as soon as darkness fell, they were tied to the line. Affliction served noodles, garlic, and tea. The poodle had a bowl of water and leftovers. They marched in this way 4 nights and 5 days, and each night was colder than the last. Christian and Big Tiger froze at night. By day, they were hungry. They came on wells several times, as Gunchuk had said they would, but the water was stale, and the tea tasted like yesterday's. They didn't meet one single person. There were no animals, either, and when they passed a dead camel by the wayside, the sunken skin was still on the skeleton, and they could see the dried-up contents of the belly, for there weren't even wolves or vultures around. "It's time we reached the Ika Gull," said Affliction sullenly. "We're almost there," said Christian. "You astound me," said Affliction. "How?" asked Big Tiger. "The knowledge of you two," interjected Good Fortune. He stopped to mount, and they all did the same, for it was late morning and the sun had warmed up. "Since yesterday," declared Christian, "we have the trails of moonlight and thunderbolt in front of us again." "I've noticed them," said Good Fortune sleepily. "They are still there," said Affliction. "Anyone can see them." "That proves we're on the right road," said Big Tiger. "We know it," said Good Fortune. "As we promised Affliction we'd be more observant," said Christian, "we noticed that for the past half hour the hoof prints show more speed." "The horses galloped along here," said Big Tiger, pointing to the path of meditation. "Oh, you young rascals," cried Good Fortune. "You're like real redbirds and better. I wouldn't be surprised if the gentlemen of the mountains came to beg you on their knees to be their chiefs." "It would be too much of an honor," said Big Tiger. "We'd have to grow up first," said Christian. They rode between round sandhills on which thorny shrubs grew, and Good Fortune was no longer sleepy. Affliction, too, looked eagerly ahead. The camels sniffed expectantly and stepped out more briskly. When the sandhills flattened out, a fertile plain with bushes and trees suddenly lay before their eyes. In summer, it would be green and magnificent as an island in the midst of the sea. They looked down between the branches of the trees, and though the trees were many, they could see the roof of a hut with a curl of smoke from it. The grass was yellow. Where it ceased, a merry little brook came out, as if hurrying to meet the world. But the world all around was desert, and the little brook could not turn back. It ran just a little way, then divided, like the end of a rope, into several ragged fringes. There were tussocks of grass here and there, a few blades of reeds stuck like daggers through the sand, but nothing more could be seen of the stream. The path led through a thicket of little beam trees and thorny scrub. In a small clearing, 2 sheep were grazing. The hoof marks of horses were to be seen, and then, suddenly, there was a square field, a genuine tilled piece of land, with furrows in which broken brown stalks and seed capsules lay. "Ene yubeno?" asked Christian and Big Tiger, who did not recognize the crop. Good Fortune and Affliction exchanged significant glances, and Good Fortune said slowly, "This is a burning shame. It's opium poppy." At the end of the field stood a clay hut. It had a window and a door and four discolored white walls. The window was decently papered, and there was only one little peephole in the lower pane. The door was made of old blackish boards, and the poodle pushed it open with his muzzle. A burning ember flew out at him, and he withdrew his thick head in haste and barked furiously, then fled for refuge to Christian and Big Tiger, who had leaped from their saddles, shouting, "Dog, come here!" Good Fortune went ahead and stopped 10 paces from the door, which had closed again mysteriously and as if of itself. Christian, as he stood near him, thought of the gingerbread house and the witch who had come out of it. "If there's anyone here," shouted Good Fortune, "let him show himself." "Don't waste words," cried a deep male voice. "Come in and drink tea." Good Fortune looked at Affliction, and Affliction took down the gun from his shoulder. "It seems," he said joyfully, "that we're invited in. That's what it sounded like, anyhow." "By a criminal," muttered Good Fortune, "and an opium grower." Affliction was not so narrow-minded. "Venerable old uncle," he called out, "have patience for 2 seconds. Be quick," he ordered in a low voice. "We'll unload here and set up the tent. You," he said to Good Fortune, "have not got the right approach to people who bury themselves in the wilderness like the saints of past ages. Let me speak with him." "All right," growled Good Fortune. "You'll quickly establish a kind of relationship. My congratulations in advance." Near the hut, there was a clear space where 2 stakes had been rammed into the ground and a line stretched between them. "We mustn't camp here," said Affliction. "It's the place for the horses." "Horses?" asked Big Tiger. "Yes, horses," said Affliction, and he pointed to the heaps of dung here and there. "What about here?" asked Christian. "All right," said Good Fortune indifferently. The place was like a fairy tale. There was a meadow surrounded by bushes, and a little slope on one side, also covered with trees, the roots of which sprang out of the ground like bent bows, but turned back again to seek the brook which ran along the boundary of the meadow. And to all these splendors, Good Fortune merely said a sulky, "All right." But Good Fortune's mood did not depress Christian and Big Tiger. They were glad to note that Affliction was happy. As soon as the tent was up, they let the camels loose. The poodle drank at the stream and ran around, joyfully wagging its tail. But he seemed afraid to venture near the hut. "Come," said Affliction, "we'll go in now." "Perhaps there'll be something to eat," said Christian, to cheer up Good Fortune, who was sitting in a black mood on a saddle before the tent. "It's the same every day," sighed Good Fortune. "Wherever I go, I happen on rogues and swindlers. I'd like to meet honest people for a change." "Our respected elder need only look at us," said Big Tiger. "You," cried Good Fortune, "I see robber chiefs in front of me." But then he had to laugh, and Christian and Big Tiger took him under the armpits and helped him to his feet. They entered the hut together, behind Affliction. The black board door opened noiselessly and closed automatically behind them, for it was fitted with a rope and pulley contraption worked by an iron ball which hung from the middle of the roof. The ceiling was unplastered, and one could see the smoky rafters. The fireplace was in the corner, opposite the door. It had a portable grate, like the fireplaces in every tent, but here there was a real chimney. By the fireplace was an open space with a smooth clay floor. A chest stood in the corner, and behind it a gong covered with straw matting. And on the gong lay a man dressed in blue trousers and jacket. He had a grayish pigtail, a powerful nose, and a thin, drooping mustache. He might have been about 50 years old and looked like an honest farmer. "We wish you good rest," said Affliction. "We wish you comfort," said Christian and Big Tiger. Good Fortune bowed silently. The man climbed down from the Kong. It was immediately obvious that he could not walk well. Grabbing a stick, he hurried over to the fire, turning around on the way to invite his guests, with a bow and a wave of arms, to sit down on the Kong. "After you," said Good Fortune. "How could we dare?" said Affliction. "Don't talk nonsense," cried the man. "Sit down." Without waiting for them to obey his invitation, he picked up the tea kettle from the hot embers. When he came back with it, Christian and Big Tiger had obediently climbed up on the Kong, and Good Fortune was sitting beside Affliction on the edge of it, his feet resting against the chest. The man took out of the chest painted porcelain cups and little dishes of melon and sunflower seeds, all in the style of the best inns. Affliction gave a satisfied wink. He seemed to have expected all this. "Please speak," said the man. "I like listening." Affliction began the introductions. "My unworthy name is Affliction," he said, "but it's not worth mentioning. Please, honored uncle, regard it as unsaid. And here are the useless rascals, Compass Mountain and Big Tiger, who are best forgotten at once. And beside me is Good Fortune, a man constantly dogged by misfortune." "From Suchow?" asked the man, turning around so quickly that his pigtail swung to. "Yes, from Suchow," said Good Fortune. "Does this surprise you?" "It doesn't surprise me," answered the man, taking down a cylindrical copper boiler from the wall and filling the cavity with burning charcoal. "Is it permissible to ask your worthy name?" asked Affliction. "No," replied the man rudely. "Call me Tolus, as everyone else does. It's all the same to me." "And to us also," said Affliction cheerfully. "Names are worth nothing, one might say. That has been proved during 1,000 times 1,000 years. My grandfather, for example, was called Lord of Riches. Do you notice anything, Tolus?" "I notice nothing," said Tolus. "But speak on. Your talk pleases me." So Affliction told the sad story of his grandfather, Lord of Riches, and of his father, Autumn Joy, who had nothing but ill luck at all seasons. Meantime, the copper kettle began to steam. When the water was bubbling, Tolus brought the kettle along. "Eat," he said, laying a plate full of cut-up raw meat beside the cauldron and handing around bone chopsticks. Christian watched to see what Affliction would do, and Affliction looked to see if Good Fortune knew how to proceed, and all three looked at Big Tiger, who, with the air of a polished man of the world, spiked a piece of meat on his chopstick and held it in the boiling water until it was cooked. Christian took note of how it was done, and Good Fortune and Affliction also took their lesson. When, in the course of time, the water had become a meat soup, Tolus fetched soup plates, and on each plate he laid a rolled chrysanthemum leaf as a flavoring for the soup, all in the manner of the best inns. He then took a bowl full of bones and laid a fine piece of meat on top of them. "Give this to your dog," he said. "He doesn't know me." Christian opened the door, and the iron ball came down a bit lower. The poodle was standing expectantly outside. He swallowed the meat in one snap, then sat down in the sun, crunching the bones. "You and you," said Tolus suddenly to Christian and Big Tiger. "Are you full?" "Thanks 10,000 times, great old man," said Christian. "The gentleman is generous beyond reason," said Big Tiger. "Nonsense," snapped Tolus. "I'm not a gentleman. Understand that." Big Tiger climbed quickly down from the Kang and stood beside Christian. They both bowed, and Christian said, "We obey your wish." "It is sad not to be permitted to do you honor," added Big Tiger. Tolus stood leaning on his stick, looking from one to the other. "You and you," he said as before, tapping each of them on the chest. "And I, we ride in an hour, on horses." "Halt there," cried Good Fortune, jumping up from the Kong. "I'll wash your ears for you, old Hunkutsi, and then you'll hear distinctly what's permissible and what's not. These two sons of princes are in my charge, and I'd like to see the man who dares to come and say, 'Go here or go there,' to them." "Don't get worked up, Good Fortune," said Tolus calmly. "What I say will be done." "Ha!" shouted Good Fortune. "There are scoundrels who think they possess the golden roll of command, but they've only got confounded cheek. You're one of them. Who are you, you old coxcomb? horse thief and liar, that you should talk as if you were the Yellow Emperor. I'm your uncle, said Tolus dryly. You should be ashamed to abuse your father's brother. Absolute silence fell. They could hear the dog cracking the bones outside, and farther off the camels trampling through the long desert grass. A ray of sunshine came through the peephole in the paper window, and the dust which good fortune had raised danced in it. Affliction sat on the Kong, smiling. It's not often, he said, that one sees such a joyful family reunion. You, my uncle, exclaimed good fortune, stepping back 3 paces. I don't know you. That's only right, said Affliction. Every genuine family reunion begins with failure to recognize. Shut your mouth, cried Good Fortune indignantly. This man, this uncle, Affliction corrected gently. Does your mother still live in Lion Lane? Asked Tolus. Good Fortune leaned against the wall, staring at Tolus, but Tolus only smiled. No, she's gone from there, muttered Good Fortune dully. Tolus went and opened the chest. When he had found what he wanted, he closed the lid and sat on it. Excuse me, dear nephew, he said. I find it hard to stand. Take this trifle. It is for your mother. Saying this, he laid 2 gleaming silver bars beside him on the chest. You need not hesitate, he said. They date from the days when I owned the inn, the 100 Sides of Truth in Anxi. I heard of it, Good Fortune admitted unwillingly, coming nearer and observing Tolus even more closely than he observed the silver. Pardon me, old uncle, he said finally. I do not wish to be unjust to anybody, but... And he stood irresolutely and with bowed head before Tolus. At last he gave him a slight bow. Tolus accepted it in good part. He uttered no word of complaint over the lack of filial respect. In fact, he tapped Good Fortune familiarly on the stomach with his stick, saying, Sit down beside me. I have just experienced the first joy in 7 years. I knew you the minute you came in the door. You're so like your father, particularly when you're angry. Unfortunately, there's no time now for lengthy explanations. Matters are urgent. The venerable chief wishes to see Compass Mountain and Big Tiger on the 2nd day of the 3rd moon before sunrise. The venerable chief, shouted Good Fortune indignantly. So you're one of those now. Yes, said Tolus. I'm one of them now, and we ride in 30 minutes. Everything is ready. Come over here, you two, cried Good Fortune, mastering his anger with difficulty. What do you think of this? Christian and Big Tiger had already exchanged several winks. They were ready to go with Tolus, and Christian was just about to say so when he met a warning look from Big Tiger. It came just as Good Fortune was asking angrily, What do you think of this? And he understood that he could not say now what he had wanted to say. Something else would have to be said, something which would restore Good Fortune's dignity. Therefore, Christian kept silent, and Big Tiger stepped forward a pace. My friend Compass Mountain and I, he said, have no opinion of our own in this matter. Christian also stepped forward a pace. Up to the present, he said, our respected elder has given all instructions, and they have proved absolutely right. As obedient children, we beg him to say what he thinks best, and we shall do it. Those were beautiful words, and Good Fortune sat upright. He was proud of Christian and Big Tiger, but his anger was still seething. Affliction now put in his oar. I, too, he said to Tolus, have been under the orders of your worthy nephew for many days, and it pleases me well. These were also beautiful words, but now it was Good Fortune's turn to speak, and he just couldn't. His heart began pounding most frightfully, and he could think of nothing else but this. My face has become black, quite black, and everyone can see it. Good Fortune despised his uncle. He'd have liked nothing better than to spit at him. Tolus raised his stick and tapped the earthen floor, and they all noticed that he, and not Good Fortune, wished to speak. Moonlight was here 3 days ago, he began. And I know from him who you are, Moonlight said. We have lost 3 days by the sandstorm. If good fortune knows the way to Saghan Burgusum, and thence to the castle, give him 3 horses, and tell him he must be there with Compass Mountain and Big Tiger in 2 nights and 3 days. It is important for him and for all of us. If he does not know the way, you must ride with them, and I rely on you. And Affliction? Asked Christian. It doesn't concern me, cried Affliction. It has nothing to do with me. Yes, indeed it has, said Tolas. You will ride slowly after them with the camels. A guide will be waiting for you at Saghan Burgusun, and in a few days you will all be together again. It can't be helped, cried Good Fortune in a tone of desperation. He put his head in his hands. His self-command seemed suddenly to forsake him, and he wept and shouted, Ah, you are one of those who are ruining my life! Where are you sending me now? Where are you sending these boys, my young brothers, to the castle? Ha! You're a lot of scoundrels, and we're in your hands. But I curse you and all who are in league with the venerable chief. He stood up. I do not know the way to Saghan Burgusun, he said. Then I must go, said Tolas, though I am old, and you know, dear nephew, why it is hard for me to ride. Yes, I know, replied Good Fortune, laughing scornfully. His cruel laughter seemed to give him satisfaction. He could now at last show this man what he thought of him, this uncle whose toes had been cut off and whom nobody at home ever spoke of because he was a criminal and had lost face. Good Fortune sat down heavily on the chest, and his glance fell on the 2 silver bars. He would push them from the chest onto the ground, and in 2 minutes he would stand up and go. Rest for a while, said Tolas. But you, and he turned to Affliction, come with me. He put on a sheepskin coat, reached for his stick, took down a little brass horn which hung on the door, and went out. Affliction followed him willingly. They walked side by side, like brothers, and when they had gone 10 paces, they reached the top of the poppy field and walked together to the end. Where the thicket began, there was a kind of bench made of bricks, and from this bench they could view the whole place, the poppy field, the hut, and the horse line. I've been here 3 years, said Tolas, and now I am leaving, never to return. But what happens to your property? Cried Affliction. That's just what I want to speak to you about. You are a sorrowful man, and such people are reliable, for they expect little or nothing. As soon as I've gone with the boys, you 2 make yourselves at home in my hut. Remain here tonight and ride on tomorrow morning. You will have 2 unloaded camels. Load up the chest and all my things. There are not many. Can you slaughter sheep? No, cried Affliction, alarmed. I can't do that. You've got a gun. Can you shoot? Yes, I can shoot, said Affliction. Then shoot my 2 sheep. Good Fortune will cut them up, and you'll have meat for a long time. Follow the path of meditation. If you 50 li every day, you'll come on the 3rd day to a valley where there's water and grass and high cliffs. The valley is called Saghan Burgusun, and a guide will be waiting for you there to take you to us. And what then? Asked Affliction. A new beginning always follows the end, cried Tolas. Be comforted. I have learned to know the miseries of the world. And so have I, said Affliction sympathetically. Nevertheless, I am not a criminal. No more am I, declared Affliction. Now, exclaimed Tolas, I am going to settle an old account. But I wanted to look over my home once more. I have done so now, and I'm ready. He stood up, and Affliction stood up too. When they reached the end of the field, Tolas took out the brass horn and blew. It made a long, wavering sound, and Tolas waited. Go in, he said to Affliction, and fetch me the sack which is on the floor near the Kong. There are real oats in it, Russian oats, from Ulyasutai. When Affliction opened the door, he found Good Fortune still sitting on the chest, and the boys standing timidly by the fireplace, exactly as he had left them. The 2 silver bars were lying glittering beside Good Fortune on the chest. "Your uncle," said Affliction casually, "is a man deserving much honor." Good Fortune raised his head and opened his mouth as if to speak, but shut it again without saying anything. Then he gave his cap a push, but that was all. "Have I told you before," inquired Affliction, "that your uncle is a man towards whom my heart turns?" "Be silent," cried Good Fortune. "Consider what you're saying." "I have considered it," replied Affliction with dignity. He took the sack, and as he went out again, he winked at Christian and Big Tiger. While they opened the door for him, he whispered, "There's nothing to fear. That uncle is a pillar of virtue." The door closed noiselessly. They could hear the tramping of hoofs outside and the soft lie, lie, lie of Tolus, who sounded as if he were speaking horse language with the horses. "You say something," whispered Big Tiger. "You can do it better," whispered Christian. "We'll both speak," said Big Tiger, taking Christian's hand. They walked up to Good Fortune in silence. For a few seconds, all were still. Then Good Fortune pushed the silver bots aside, as if by doing so he could hide the tormenting proof of kinship. He pushed them until they dropped over the edge of the chest and fell with a thud on the ground. Then, at long last, Good Fortune lifted his head, but because he had wept, he hid his face in his hands. "Go away," he said. "A man such as I am has no right to give orders here." "We have to go," said Big Tiger. "Previously, our respected elder has had secrets which he kept from us. Will he please excuse us if we now have a secret which we keep from him?" "But it's not a bad secret," said Christian quickly. "It's a good one, in fact," he added. "It's not a secret at all, but an appointment." "With whom?" cried Good Fortune. He took his hands from his face and laid them expectantly on his knees. "Tell me, so that I shall be easier in my mind letting you go from me." "We shall be with our respected elder again in Ming Shui," replied Big Tiger. Good Fortune smiled sadly. "You're a pair of rascals," he said, "and you talk as if I were someone who didn't know your tricks. Well, I don't care, but I have to tell you, for you must know, the kind of man you're going riding with. This uncle of mine," he paused involuntarily, "is a murderer." Again there was silence, and Christian and Big Tiger felt deeply shaken. "One can't say worse than that about one's father's brother, can one?" said Good Fortune. "Perhaps you think it can't be true, because when a man is a murderer, his head falls into the hangman's basket. Did you notice his beautiful hands, the long, even fingers with the stubby tips? Those hands once killed a man. Afterwards it came out that the dead man was a common robber, a Mongol, and one of Jampignac's band, a gentleman of the mountains. You see, my father's brother was lucky. Instead of cutting off his head, they only cut off his toes, and he has walked on his heels since. His home was burned down by Dampignac's men in revenge, and he himself disappeared. We were very glad when he did, but what's the good? My family is shamed and disgraced." "Undeserved misfortune brings no blame," cried Big Tiger. "We are sorry for our respected elder." "But," said Christian, "your worthy uncle is now himself one of the company of the venerable chief. How is that?"
"I can't make that out," said Good Fortune. "There's something queer there, a real mystery."
"We'll try to unravel it," promised Big Tiger. "Are you taking an assignment of that kind again?" asked Good Fortune. "You'd better mind your own business." "Your worthy uncle doesn't look like a murderer," Christian assured him. "Affliction called him a pillar of virtue," said Big Tiger. "Oh, holy saints of past ages," cried Good Fortune. "Affliction should be eating thistles and braying. I know what I know, and you shall know it too. He did it with a kitchen knife, so look out whenever he takes a knife in his hand." "We shall," promised Big Tiger. "I'll give you something which will make the old man sit up," said Good Fortune, tapping his pistol. "But will you be able to handle it?" "No," cried Big Tiger, alarmed. "Please don't give it to me." "And what about you?" asked Good Fortune. "I couldn't manage it very well either," confessed Christian. "You have to press the trigger. That's all I know." "That's enough," said Good Fortune. "See this lever? You must push it to the side. Otherwise, nothing happens.
but only use it in an emergency. I shall not touch it otherwise, promised Christian. And you must watch out, said Good Fortune. It's best if only one of you sleeps at a time and the other keeps watch. You're clever lads. Now you must learn endurance. While continuing his fatherly warnings, he shortened the strap of the holster and hung it on Christian's shoulder. The pistol was heavy, and the red silk tassel dangled down almost to Christian's knees. Do you think, Compass Mountain, that you really know how to shoot? He asked, suddenly doubtful. I know, Christian interrupted him politely, that one doesn't shoot. Shooting is unfair. What is that? Asked Good Fortune. Compass Mountain thinks, Big Tiger explained, that one doesn't shoot as long as one has a mouth to speak with. I see you understand me, Good Fortune concluded, well pleased. Of course there are exceptions. For instance, my uncle. You could without hesitation. I mean, a man like that isn't much loss. But with other people, there might be unpleasant consequences. He stood up. I'm not one for ceremony, he said, but you must promise me you'll take good care of yourselves and act just as if I were with you. We beg our respected elder to stand above us and receive our promise, said Big Tiger. You are like a father and mother to us, said Christian. Therefore, it is fitting you should do so. Since you wish it, said Good Fortune, standing up on the chest. Then Christian and Big Tiger went on their knees in token of filial obedience, and it was all very solemn. As they stood up, and Good Fortune was about to get down from the chest, the door suddenly opened. The iron ball slid, and there was a dull thud. Are you ready? Cried Affliction. Ha! Shouted Good Fortune. But he went white and had to sit down. It was lucky that he had his hat on and that the Kong was just behind the chest, for he was on the point of fainting. There are scoundrels, he groaned, but I didn't know you were one of them. Affliction was much distressed. You'll be all right presently, he said reassuringly. Don't faint, for we need you. What for? Asked Good Fortune weakly. Your uncle wants to say goodbye to you. He's already mounted. Let him ride to the devil, shouted Good Fortune. He will presently, promised Affliction. There's just one trifling matter, and he took a white sheepskin coat off the Kong. Please excuse me, he said, and as there was nothing else to hand, he took off his own coat and pushed it under Good Fortune's sinking head. Come, he whispered to the boys, we have to hurry. We're going, said Big Tiger, and we wish our reverend elder a speedy recovery from illness. I'm not ill, sighed Good Fortune, but I'm not particularly well. When shall heaven permit us to be together again? In 10 days, answered Big Tiger at random. It might be 11, said Christian. Or 12, added Affliction. Take this coat, Big Tiger. It's yours. It may be a bit big for you, but it will do. He looked at Good Fortune, who was getting back his color. Then he pushed Christian and Big Tiger toward the door. The stamping of hoofs could be heard outside and the joyful barking of the poodle. Then Good Fortune heard Affliction say, Your nephew cannot come, unfortunately. When he stood up to come out, your door ball caught him on the head. With his dying breath, he wished you many happy stars. I heard it distinctly, said Tolas. Dog, come with us, cried Christian and Big Tiger. Then the dog began barking. Affliction cried, Se yabona! The sound of the trotting hoofs grew fainter and then faded away. In the hut, all was silent, and Good Fortune sat upright and looked around him. The room was empty and very tidy, like a first-class inn, thought Good Fortune.